Digital transformation starts with modernizing infrastructure and data services so that they could be flexible and scalable. I mean, that's just what it is. It's not only for today's needs, but for wherever we go in the future, not knowing what tomorrow brings, right? So some of the initiatives that RTD's undertaken, and let me just be clear, in some instances, we have been behind, hence going back to our back to basics. So it's critically important that we recognize that, but we want to build upon that, because I looked at the agency when I came in, a lot of my colleagues would agree that we were data rich, but information poor, right? So how are we using that data for the betterment of how we're delivering transit services? So with that as a backdrop, here at the agency, we have a project underway to deliver a next generation application for real-time data. And it's really what we're noting as, you know, RTD's traveler information system. So it provides data to the public, you know, to place, display signs and applications. Yeah. And our current application, like I said, is, you know, information rich, but data poor.
Welcome to the Mobility Innovators Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mobility Innovator Podcast. I'm your host, Jaspal Singh. Mobility Innovator Podcast invite key innovators in the transportation and logistics sector to share their experience and future forecast. In this episode, we'll be discussing the transformation journey of transportation in Denver. Our today guest is responsible for running the system in Denver. She's the general manager and CEO of RTD Denver and has been leading the organization since 2020. Prior to this, she served as a deputy CEO of Long Beach Transit from 2014 to 2019. Before that, she held various executive positions at LA Metro, SFMTA, and WMATA. She worked in all corners of the country and has long experience in the sector. In 2019, she was named as one of the 10 women who move the nation. I'm so happy to welcome Deborah Johnson, General Manager and Chief Executive Officer of RTD Denver. Now it's time to listen and learn. Hello, Deborah. I'm so happy to have you on the podcast. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know there is a lot going on in Denver, so thank you for your time.
My pleasure. I'm glad to be here with you.
So I actually want to kickstart our discussion with your professional journey. And I must say, it's really an impressive career, 33 years in transit. And you work with all the key agencies like BART, VTA, SFMTA, LA Metro, Long Beach Transit, and now RTD Denver, which is again one of the amazing agency. So I want to ask you, what was your first memory of public transit? Like why, how you survived 33 years in transit? And how did it influence your career path? Because surviving for so long, working in different agencies, what is your secret sauce? And by the way, I really love the line on your LinkedIn profile, which say servant leader and person in people business.
Yeah, so thank you so much. I appreciate the question and thank you for the compliment and supportive words. First and foremost, I'm a firm believer that public transportation is really the great societal equalizer. And what I mean by that is we weren't all born on a level playing field. In order to take advantage of opportunities, we first must get to those opportunities. And that's where public transportation comes in. I often think about the opportunities that have been afforded to me. I grew up in Central California. Using public transportation when I was coming of age was a sense of freedom. My friends and I could get together and go to different places, but also it enabled me to go to a different school. It enabled me to have access to be in the advanced placement program or the gifted and talented education program. And so as I look at public transportation, it really is about people. And when I talk about the great societal equalizer and you talk about my handle on LinkedIn being a servant leader and a person in the people business, that's really what it is all about. We're all imperfectly perfect. And public transportation, when you look at it through the history of American society, we've been in the forefront in reference to the civil rights movement. It has a place in history. And as I stand in my truth of being a woman, but more importantly, being a Black woman living in America, I understand how important it is relative to where we are, and especially with what we're dealing with today.
That's amazing. And I really curious to learn, like any special lesson you learned during your journey, your path, you know, to grow in the career, any risk you taken or any step you taken, like how young professional can learn from your profile.
stand in your truth and be who you are authentically. What I mean by that is don't shy away. Sit at the table. Let your voice be heard. I think it's very important because we never know who was watching. And I can recall being in a place where I was the only woman in the room, and assumptions are made about what my role was and how did she get there. And I can remember speaking to my dad when I had moved from the West Coast to the East Coast when I was working in Washington, D.C. And while this may sound sort of odd, I knew the intent that he had behind it. I was dealing with an issue in the workplace whereby I just felt isolated, being like the only one, being the only woman, being a young person, and at the risk of being boastful, being smart and engaging and being intentional and purposeful. And he said, baby, I don't have any sons, but I'm going to tell you, you need to be a man. And what he was meaning is like, be bold, take control of the room, say what it is that you know you possess and what you feel. And I think looking back at that, hindsight is 20/20, and that's exactly what it is. You can't shy away and be a wallflower, especially when you're in those spaces, because oftentimes I think about representation. It matters. You don't know who is watching you, and you are paving the way from others, just as you said in the formation of that question. What would I say to young professionals? Because somebody most definitely is watching the steps that I take, and I want to ensure that they can follow in said footprints.
Amazing. No, I love all the point you mentioned. It's okay to be imperfect, perfect. Everybody is imperfectly perfect, you know, so everybody is unique. You need to make sure your voice is heard. And actually, this podcast is global. So I'm really looking forward. Your voice is heard not only in US, but across the globe, and people get inspired from your journey. And I really love your dad's line saying you need to be a man. It's basically mean you need to make sure you get your space. And I have a young daughter. So this is a message I'm going to pass to her. So now you're heading this regional transportation district, RTD Denver. And like I mentioned, this is a global podcast. So I don't know many people know about what RTD is, but it's actually serving 3 million people in 40 municipalities. And I can imagine you have 6.5 hour long board meeting. Because all these board members coming from different municipalities, you have got a lot of work. So can you share a little bit more about the agency and what role it play in Denver area?
Yeah, so thank you so much. What's critically important to keep in mind about RTD is that it is the only multimodal transit agency in the entire state of Colorado. So while there may be other transit agencies within the state, they're typically in the mountain towns. And when I say mountain towns, we're talking about where people are going to ski and things of the like. And so as we think about metropolitan Denver in and of itself, half of the population of the state lives in the metro area. And so while we talk about Denver, and to the point that you just raised, there's 40 municipalities within 8 counties, but the bulk of those individuals live within Denver. So it's critically important as you think about the transportation network that has been built that connects people to and fro, recognizing this is an international podcast, the Denver International Airport is the 6th busiest airport in the entire world. And so when you think about RTD in and of itself, we are operating a commuter rail line, which is one of our most productive modes of transport, going from Denver Union Station, which is an intermodal transportation hub, to an international airport. So we are providing connectivity for international travelers, business professionals, as well as visitors alike. And it is really the lifeblood, I believe, of the metro area, ensuring that we are bringing full circle business opportunities. There's a lot of companies that have moved here by virtue of the access points, because we're in the central part of the United States. You can get to the West Coast within 2 hours. You can get to the southern portions of the country, i.e. Texas. You can, you know, travel abroad and get to Europe relatively quickly, a lot faster than you could from the West Coast. So looking at it from that perspective, it is critical to the economic vibrancy of the area in and of itself. And then more to the point, as we talk about the localized contributions, every person that resides within the city and county of Denver, they live within a mile of a transit stop. And while that level of access certainly varies in other municipalities and regions in the area, We at RTD remain committed to providing that excellent service and furthering, you know, our vision of being the trusted leader in mobility among the communities. And so I think looking through that lens showcases the vitality of our network and the critical elements that we bring to the region as a whole and to the state of Colorado and the country.
That's amazing. No, I tell people always, any city you go, the first touch point is the transportation in that city. And if you can move from airport to the downtown easily, you know, you will always remember, because that's play a key role for the economic creation of that city. Now, you moved to RTD Denver during the pandemic time from Long Beach Transit. I don't know why you did that, because it was not the time to move, but it was like middle of the pandemic and RTD Denver was hit even badly as everybody was working from home and even the system was suffering from many legacy issues. So it was a bold decision, I would say. Now I want to ask you, now you completed 5 years and actually you got renewal of your role. So congratulations on that. Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to take that role and how did you feel after first 5 years in this job?
Well, thank you for that question. I often get that. And I am not one that sits idly by. I am motivated, inspired by challenges. And literally and figuratively, you cannot spell the word challenge without the word change. And I am a firm believer that you have to lean in. So when I heard about this opportunity, I thought to myself, why not? I have been in varying roles throughout the course of my career where I've been in leadership positions, but I was always in support of someone else. At Long Beach Transit, I served as the deputy CEO. When I was at LA Metro, I served as the chief operations officer. Prior to that, I was in San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency, and I served as the number two at that agency as well. And for a stint, I was the interim CEO after Nat Ford left the agency, who is now a Jacksonville Transportation Authority. So I thought, I'm always the bridesmaid and not the bride. Why can't I lead my own transit agency? And it was a change for the better. I knew I had something to offer. I don't shy away from challenges. And then more to the point in reference to the whole notion about representation matters. When you look, at least in the U.S., there was a study done by the Pew Research Center, and this dates back to 2017. But as it relates to the most transit-reliant demographic in the United States is single mothers of color. But oftentimes, you don't see individuals that fit that profile leading transit agencies. And so as I think about my trajectory and my journey, I believe it's incumbent upon me to be that voice from the bus stop into the boardroom. And so bringing a different perspective, harnessed in my interpersonal skills, lean into the moment to figure out what might be best, especially when we are in the midst of the pandemic with such unknown variables and not knowing where tomorrow would lend itself, but recognizing that there was a challenge. And I thought, why not grab the bull by the horns and go for it? And I basically entered the recruitment race and was the victor.
That's amazing. And I really love what you said. The challenge cannot spell without change. So change is a part of the challenge, but it's important. And any lesson have you learned navigating RTD through that pandemic recovery? Because it was not easy, you know, when everything, like you said, you don't know what is coming tomorrow. What was your biggest lesson during that period?
Well, I think for me, what was a big lesson is recognizing that we're all imperfectly perfect. We were dealing with so much. And what I mean by that is on an international spectrum, because all of us were going through the pandemic, we were dealing with a lot of different issues. While I came to work every day, it was important for me recognizing that folks that are on the front lines, you cannot operate a commuter rail consist remotely. You cannot drive a bus remotely. And it was important for me to show up and show out. And what I mean by that is supporting the people on the front lines, because they were the individuals that were taking great risk, moving key individuals that were working during that time, people in the healthcare field, people working at the pharmacies and the grocery stores. And I broached that from the sense that we all were coming into the office to our work places to our operating divisions with so much that may have been burdening us, and recognizing that being amongst other people that were still in the workplace and not doing it solely from a remote location, that we could rally around and recognize that we're all individuals and we all have stories we know nothing about. Let's extend grace to one another, because as we were dealing with civil unrest within, you know, the United States, we had the insurrection at the United States Capitol. We had the aftermath of the verdict of the George Floyd murder. And I remember stepping into that space just feeling overwhelmed. And I showcased to the individuals with whom I have the privilege of leading that I too am a human being and I have feeling. And all of these different ills that are plaguing society don't escape me as well. And so we're in this together and we can be vulnerable, but we can also make the decision when we have the opportunity to be right or be kind, let's choose kindness. And for me, I think if anything, I have been able to engage with the individuals that comprise this agency, and it has given me a great sense of joy and the sense that they're able to see me as a person and not just somebody with a title of whom can't not relate to what they're going through on a day-to-day basis.
That's an amazing leadership lesson, because you need to be shoulder to shoulder with your staff. You can't just be away if they are on the ground. So that's a, like a big morale boost for them, because when they say you're walking along with them, not front or not behind, it creates a big morale boost. And I love the line you said, we all are human. It doesn't matter what title, what position we hold, but end of the day, we all are our same human being. Now, I really love, after taking over as a CEO role, you actually now created a strategic plan in 2021 for 5 years. And it has some long-term strategy, and really love the plan for a couple of reasons. One, in the strategic plan, you mentioned about back to basic, you know, state of food report. You're not talking about all the fancy stuff. We're like, let's go back to the drawing board and work on the basics. You talk about people power or recruitment, you know, like to focus on people. You talk about welcoming transit environment, because that's how people should feel, that transit is welcoming for them. And then the customer and community connection, you know, I think that's also very important. People should feel they connect. So these all are important points. I want to learn a little bit more about RTD strategic plan. And can you share how are you driving the organization and some of action? Because when you come as a new CEO, you have an old team. So how do you inspire people to follow the vision you have?
Right. So thank you so much for that question. When I came into the organization, I had a transition plan. And while I pride myself on being well-versed in public transport, the management of and the delivery of, I did not know the culture here at the Regional Transportation District. And that's incredibly important, because as we know with culture, it's either created with intentionality or it's by happenstance. And what I learned here is that it was by happenstance, whether good, bad, or indifferent. And so as we talk about our mission, what is it that we do each and every day? It seems that people had different viewpoints on that. And basically, what was our vision collectively? Where do we aspire to be? And in doing informational interviews, be it with elected officials throughout the region, be it with my board, to whom I report as a directly elected board, as well as the people that make up the agency and stakeholders and union members, I clearly saw that we weren't working toward that same North Star. And that's where the notion of having a strategic plan that resonated with all different entities would be fundamental. And with the support of my leadership team at the time, as well as the board, we collectively decided on a strategic plan. And with that strategic plan, we had, you know, we have currently still four priorities as it relates to, you know, community value, customer excellence, financial success, people power, or employee ownership, I should say, and people power stems from that. So with that as the backdrop, recognizing the four initiatives that you just spoke of, what we've done intentionally through the course of data, engagements that we've had not only with employees, but with customers doing intercepts within our transit system, is honing in on what means the most to people that are working for the system and those that are utilizing the system. So when we talk about the importance of getting back to basics, here at RTD, prior to Deborah Johnson being thought of, we had undertaken this vast capital investment program. And now we're at a point where we have to ensure that we're making good on those investments. And while it's not sexy, we have to put ourselves in a place where we can capitalize on the investment the taxpayers made for years to come. And so focusing on the back to basics and asset renewal is key for the next 30 years. And more to the point, even when you look internally to the organization, it's like, what processes and procedures do we have in place? So as we have people that will leave the organization through attrition, that we have established protocols so people know what to do and you're not losing that institutional knowledge. And quite naturally, when we talk about people power, we are people moving people. And we are a labor intensive organization. No matter if you talk about machine learning or artificial intelligence, there's still that human element, because as long as there's people on the planet, as we saw via COVID, that we as human beings crave that interaction, right? And so we have to ensure that we're investing in our people. And when you recruit people, you want to make sure that they stay. So it's having those training programs and ensuring that we're providing them with the resources so they can be successful, so they in turn can contribute to the organization, so they can see how they fit in with our mission of making lives better through connections, regardless of where you are in the organization. If you're responsible for ensuring that that bus pulls off the lot at its designated time to hit that first time point, that's critical to the employee, or excuse me, critical to the customer experience, because if that bus doesn't leave on time, there's residual impacts. And then if we talk about a welcoming transit environment, just by virtue of where we were with the pandemic and all the societal ills that have plagued us with unhouselessness and people suffering from addiction and mental health and things of the like, a lot of folks during the time sought refuge in public rights away. We want to ensure that people feel comfortable in the system. So basically, it's working with our partnership. It was growing out our regional transportation district's police department so we could leverage the investments that have been made relative to our stations. But more importantly, looking through the lens of people, in the sense of making sure that RTPD basically we're focusing on the well-being of the general populace through the lens of, hey, we may need mental health care clinicians. And I'm happy to say that RTD was the first agency in the country that basically had that co-responder type model moving forward, because we can't arrest ourselves out of just societal problems as a whole, because we're interwoven in the fabrics of the communities that we serve. And quite naturally, as we talk about the customer and community connections, that gets back to what I just said relative to people moving people. We're imperfectly perfect. There's people utilizing the system, and the operative word in what we do is public. We don't pick and choose our customers, because we're all part of the public as we move forward, and recognizing that people here in this organization have a role in all of that, and they can see where they fit in that large jigsaw puzzle, regardless of the shape and size, that box top cover will still come to fruition. And it's getting that understanding with everybody to come to the point of understanding what continuous improvement is and doing that, you know, plan, do, act, check part of it all.
Amazing. No, that's, I can say you know all the strategic plan by heart. You know each and every word of it, because you are actually implementing it. And that clearly show. And the point you mentioned about the public transport is the business of people moving people. So you need to take care of your customer. You need to take care of your staff, because ultimately they are the one who are providing a better service. And if the customer get a better service, they will come back and bring more people on the job. And I would say, like, it's not only RTD is like the mental health co-responder job you're saying. Beside that, you're also doing a lot of other interesting stuff, which I read during my research. One is about this First Mile Free program. It's very innovative and creative, where the RTD is creating this first and last mile connectivity and will provide a kind of a free travel for two stations for next 2 years in 2026 and 2027. So I'm very interested to understand what is this whole program all about and why do you think first and last mile connectivity is very important?
Well, let me start with the latter part of the question first, and then I'll go back to the other two questions you posed. So keeping in mind that we all know people who have the greatest access to transit tend to utilize it more. Mm. And individuals who have to travel more than half a mile by foot or using a mobility device are much less likely to use it. And so we have to be intentional and purposeful when we talk about ensuring that populations that may shy away from the notion of public transport, especially in the US, because so many people are just so enamored with their automobiles, we have to create the opportunity where it's like second nature and you're not thinking about it. So getting back to the question you posed about this program in and of itself, I will say that RTD can't take sole credit because a couple of years ago, by virtue of what I talked about with our strategic planning initiatives and things of the like, where I was engaging with stakeholders, learned that there were some opportunities within the greater communities in which we served. And it was really outside of Denver more so that the access to public transport wasn't where it should be in the sense of people being so in love with their cars. And so we developed what we call the partnership program, and it's whereby RTD set aside some monies and did a call for projects relative to the communities within our greater service area. We have like 15 districts within RTD. And so we have these sub regions and have representation from staff and stakeholders, and we call them sub-regional councils. Working with them, we talked about our strategic plan because that's the foundational piece of it all, is that we're going to do a call for projects whereby we could have some innovative and creative community connector type initiatives that would feed into the greater transit network that RTD operates. And so keeping in mind, this program that you just referenced was created organically within the community and prioritized by the planners within that sub-region. And so while I said the programs are not necessarily operated by RTD, they really complement the connectivity to our transit network, and they don't impede or compete with what we're doing for service delivery. I say they complement what we're doing. And so simply put, RTD provides the funding that allows for like the 40 municipalities within these eight counties, along with transit management associations and transit management organizations, to create those mobility solutions that make sense in those localities, because it's not a cookie cutter approach. Mm. What might work well in Denver may not work well in LA, may not work well in San Francisco, may not work well in Boston. And the same is within, you know, the Denver metro area. So the first mile free was pitched to RTD. And so, as you indicated, we'll be funding it as a pilot. And there's criteria because we want to ensure, you know, it is in alignment with our strategic priority, that is serving like equity populations, and that there's the potential for greater transit utilization. So if it's successful, we anticipate that others will propose similar projects in the other parts of our 2,345 square mile service area.
That's amazing. Actually, this was one of the points I learned about, that RTD has this partnership program and provide funding to these agencies. And it's quite interesting because you are actually co-creating with them. You are empowering these smaller group to co-create and meeting their requirement and need. Like you said, it's not always each municipality and each area has a similar requirement. Somebody need more on demand, somebody need this last mile connectivity, somebody has some other fixed line service requirement. So creating those empowerment. So congratulations. I mean, really interesting. This partnership program is really innovative and creative, I would say, because that's sometimes the problem is you try to impose the same model everywhere and it doesn't work. So you need to be understanding what people need and let them empower to do that. Now, many transit agencies are facing this financial challenge. You talk about the financial cliff. I meet a lot of CEOs and their biggest worry is like, how will they overcome the financial cliff in coming month or coming years? I would say RTD is lucky in that sense. You have, large part of the revenue coming from sales tax and other sources. But I read that RTD is already looking some other sources. And I always tell people the best time to worry about something is when you don't need to worry about it. So it's good to see RTD is already looking to diversify resources. So do you want to share why you are looking to do it now and what are the options explored by RTD so far?
Yeah, so thank you for that question. I want to ensure that all of your listeners know that we too do have some belt tightening to do as we move forward, because as we clearly know, most public transportation is subsidized in some form or fashion. And while I can say that RTD is on firm footing, we're not looking to expand our current service as relates now, just due to the fact that we need to do some belt tightening. And you indicated that the primary revenue sources that we have at this agency is sales and use tax. That constitutes, anywhere from 70 to 75% of our revenue stream. And then, 20%, give or take, from grants, mainly federal assistance, and then Farebox, which is only 5%. And so what is intriguing about where we sit, we don't get any state funding. I mean, there's been some introduction of some sources within the past couple of years, because we've been talking about this. We have our Zero Fare for Youth program, and that's something that's really dear to my heart, in the sense that we want to invest in the younger generation so we can expose them to public transport. I'm a firm believer that basically it enables them to get to school. If in fact you have somebody on the lower economic rung of a financial ladder, their parents or guardians don't have to decide, am I going to send my child to school, or I'm going to have to decide to feed them. And so we take that out of the equation. And more to the point as well, you're developing a good environmental citizen as you move forward. And so with the exception of the Zero Fare for Youth program, where we partnered with the state and they provided us funding for about 18 months for that program, which I think, as I said, is a good return on investment, because you're creating that transit customer for life. Yeah. We're currently focused on living within our means, maintaining the assets in a state of good repair. And as you know, we expanded rapidly in the past, perhaps too rapidly, and it's critical to ensure that we have sufficient funding for operations and ongoing maintenance. So with that as a backdrop, just last year around this time, we went to the ballot in 2024 to seek voter approval to retain revenues that would otherwise be returned to the region. So which would significantly impair the agency's ability to deliver service. So the way it works in the state, it's called TABOR, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. And it was quantified that you could only receive a certain amount of those taxes. And when it reached that threshold, those monies could be returned to the voters. Well, the voters at the ballot said, no, you could keep those monies. That's and nice. So that was something in and of itself. It didn't necessarily give us additional funding, but it ensured that we retained the funding that we had. And at this juncture, we're open to all options, particularly additional funding in partnership with the state of Colorado. I've had conversations, having lived in different states within the country, whereby I look at it through the lens, perhaps property tax would be something that would be helpful, because you have individuals that are already vested in the community by virtue of owning property and things of the like. And it's something that the state of Colorado in recent years haven't really embraced, because when I think about the sales and use tax, some of the most vulnerable populations, when they go and buy something, those monies are being contributed to RTD, and they're already trying to utilize the system with less. And so open to ideas as we look at various partnerships as we move forward. And we have done some of those things, as I indicated, with the state of Colorado, with the varying departments and enterprises that consist within the state.
No, that's great. And like you mentioned in the beginning, like, public transport is freedom. And it's allow people to move around. And this youth, in fact, I was in China a couple of weeks back, and there also they have a lot of program. Youth are free, kids are free, university students are free. And the old population above 60 is free. The military personnel are free.
Yeah.
And when I asked those people, I said, how do you fund? And they said, public transport is public service.
Yep.
We have a public service contract with the city, and city need to pay us to run these services. So every year or every 3 years, they have a public service contract where the city have to sanction the fund. But happy to share, you know, some of these models, because I think this is required.
I think that's great. And thank you for sharing that. I've always been of the mindset, like if you were in a state of duress and you needed to call law enforcement, you needed to call the police, you're not having to pay before you call them. Or if you needed some kind of medical services and needed an ambulance dispatch, you're not paying before that comes or your house is on fire. And so in light of what you said, public transportation is a public service, and I believe it should be treated the same way. That'll take a lot of stakeholdering and engagement to get people there, because we know funds are short. But as we talk about where we are, transportation being interwoven into the fabrics of the communities that we serve, we have to think about land use and economic development and how critical public transport is to all of that.
Yeah, that's very important. No, happy to share more detail about that. And,
okay.
And happy to support from UITP side. How can we have more vocal voice? Now, one key challenge transit agencies are facing also is the lower ridership. And it's also because of the safety, like you mentioned, you know, the societal issue, and there are these problems in the society, addiction and homelessness. And a lot of people don't feel safe, but RTD has introduced a new safety plan, and I already noticed some positive results. I was reading some report, and I saw that you have this RTD Transit Watch app too, where you can actually report things. So quite innovative. So can you share some of the initiative taken by RTD to recover ridership, and how do you see agencies can adjust to the new reality? Because maybe now we need to forget about 2019 and before 2019. This is the current number, and now we need to grow from here.
You hit the nail on the head. I mean, prior to the pandemic, when we look at data and we look at trend lines, don't we normally look at them in three-year intervals? So yeah. Why are we now going back as we're fastly approaching 2026, still talking about what happened in 2019? That's just absurd. From the vantage point of transit utilization and the word that we all use is ridership, I consider that to be an output. You know, we're doing various things to entice people to want to use transit services. And what we yield from that is greater usage, which we coin as ridership. So that clearly is an output. I'm more focused on providing quality transit services, you know, ensuring customer comfort, their personal security, as you indicated, and delivering service when and where, you know, people most need it. And, but that's only the big picture. As you talked about, how are we going to recoup the greater transit utilization of the ridership? There are some important factors that I want to point out, and I've been talking about this a lot as of late with members of the Colorado State Legislature, business members, and things of the like, because it's incredibly important to recognize where we're situated here in the metropolitan Denver area, that the Denver metro area has experienced the slowest return to office rate in the country. There was a recent Axios article that, if my memory serves me correctly, highlighted that Denver lags behind most, if not all, major cities, with a 40% decline in office visits between July 2019 and July of 2025. And so this places Denver behind, you know, big cities in the country, such as like Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, Boston, and Washington, D.C. And those cities have experienced 30 to 35% declines. But here we're talking about the city in the Rocky Mountain West that's experienced greater than a 40% decline. And so just to put this in greater perspective, like New York City actually experienced a 1.3% decline. And we see that in the city's transit utilization, because quite naturally, you know, when you think about New York City in comparison to like a Denver, you see that difference. But then another factor in all of this is that currently 30 to 40% of buildings in downtown Denver are either vacant or significantly underutilized. So when you think about the old adage, especially here in the States, about we're only good as our last rush hour because people are commuting into the central business district and commuting out. Now, those people that are living in those outlying areas, because like I said, here we are in Denver, and then we have Denver is one city and county, and then you have 39 others. Mm. What does that mean for us? And so further to the point, the agency's transportation network was built on a hub and spoke system to get people into the downtown area. Now it's an opportunity to rethink where and when transit services are being delivered. One thing that we've clearly seen with the advent of COVID is that, okay, people may not be utilizing it to go to work, but we do want to engage in a lot of social activities. And here in the Denver area, we have a lot of different professional sports teams. And most of the venues are downtown. We have the Denver Nuggets basketball. We're in football season. The Broncos, people were utilizing our system just Monday night to see the game against the Cincinnati Bengals. Mm-hmm. We have a baseball team, not that they're doing anything well at this point, but people are still coming downtown to converge. And so we're capitalizing on those opportunities relative to those, as I call them, activity centers, and ensuring that we are leveraging our service delivery models to capture that demographic going forward, because it's not just about working. But what I'll do with this, since I've been on this question a lot, you got me going because it's top of mind. We are launching our comprehensive operational analysis to determine how best to provide transit within the vast region. And of course, we want to maximize on those taxpayer dollars and invest in the system as appropriate. So we'll be getting that underway. We're looking to do a retain a consultant the latter part of this year so we can be raring to go in the beginning of 2026. And quite naturally, that will be an extensive process considering that, you know, I coined it comprehensive as we move forward. So we'll have data from that as we can use that as the foundation as we look at how we deliver services in the region.
No, that's very important. And you rightly mentioned, like many other cases, you don't even look 2-3 years back. And now in case of transit, why you want to go back 5 years? It was a different world, a different reality. The technology has a big change, and the office space. I mean, I would say my wife doesn't go to office every day, so I feel happy because I feel somebody's at home when I'm traveling. So, but that's a new reality. We need to understand that people, and that's what a lot of agencies tell me, that the riders are back, but the ridership pattern is not back, because earlier they were taking, like, let's say 10 trip or 12 trip in a week. Now they only take 3 or 4 trip in a week. So it can never be the same number. So your people are back in the system, but probably they are using less what they were using earlier. So it's the same challenge. Mm-hmm. Now, AI is a buzzword right now. Everybody talk about AI. Everybody's talk about digitalization, technology, artificial intelligence, machine learning. What are RTD's current priority for digital transformation? How you're using real, because you mentioned about you want to do this comprehensive operational analysis and data. You use word data many times. So I want to understand how you're using real-time data, contactless payment, AI for scheduling. What are the initiative RTD is doing?
Yeah, so you hit the nail on the head, as we all know. I mean, digital transformation starts with modernizing infrastructure and data services so that they could be flexible and scalable. I mean, that's just what it is. Mm. It's not only for today's needs, but for wherever we go in the future, not knowing what tomorrow brings, right? So some of the initiatives that RTD's undertaken, and let me just be clear, in some instances, we have been behind, hence going back to our back to basics. So it's critically important that we recognize that, but we want to build upon that, because I looked at the agency when I came in, a lot of my colleagues would agree that we were data rich, but information poor, right? So how are we using that data for the betterment of how we're delivering transit services? So with that as a backdrop, here at the agency, we have a project underway to deliver a next generation application for real-time data. And it's really what we're noting is, you know, RTD's traveler information system. So it provides data to the public, you know, to place, display signs and applications. Yeah. And our current application, like I said, is, you know, information rich, but data poor. It's clunky, it's limited in its capability to deliver the information services for a modern transit organization. And so while the work has just gotten underway, we are anticipating improvements in the area in the next like 9 to 12 months. You mentioned contactless payment, and this is what I mean. We've been a little behind the eight ball on this, but nonetheless, we are there now, right? So since 2022, we have been replacing our electronic fare collection system on our buses and our platforms, which of course, most would know is a prerequisite to accepting contactless payments. And so in the coming months, we'll begin testing the open payment concept and work towards a proof of concept. So testing go as planned. We were talking about November, but you know, it ebbs and flows because we're already, today is October 1st. So we plan to launch open and contactless payment in quarter four. And I use quarter four, like I said, it's all about the testing. If everything goes well, it'll be November, but if not, it'll be December, but it'll most definitely be before the end of this year. And that will help getting back to the last question you and I were discussing. As we talk about transit utilization and people utilizing the system, we want to take all of that thought out of hopping on board, right? Because there's that fear, the trepidation and the angst, like, I don't know what to do. People are going to be looking at me. How do I board this bus? How do I get on this train? How do I use this clunky machine? And so now with, you know, your Apple Wallet or Google Pay or a credit card, you could just hop on. So we're excited about that. And then what I'll round out is like our AI for scheduling, quite naturally. That's critical, as we know, in transit service delivery. So we're working on building what I would say would be a solid, unified data foundation. And so the inputs that go into machine learning and artificial intelligence tools must be based upon a good strategy and solid data. So what we're trying to do right now is ensuring that any AI tool RTD uses includes the human in the loop. And I learned this from my chief information and technology officer, because this is in my bailiwick, but that's critically important as we talk about the human in the loop, because we know the data is biased and that we need to have human-based decisions to train and correct data that will allow more effective and precise results for, you know, our customers in the system. So along with the infrastructure modernization and building on the AI infrastructure with trusted data pipelines, we can provide, you know, more insights, but we have more insights to put more things into action. And as anyone who uses AI in the marketplace knows, it'll be a force multiplier for the agency and to enhance, you know, the customer experience.
Oh, for sure. For sure. No, I mean, the like you mentioned, like you were a little behind, but now you're catching up fast. And that's also sometimes help, because the legacy also, you know, adopting a legacy system and changing it's a problem. And that's what I see a lot of U.S. transit agencies 2 decades back, or I would say 20 years back, they were ahead. But then the technology changed and they couldn't be able to move that fast the way technology changed. But now you have opportunity to leapfrog back and bringing that open loop payment system. In fact, I was in Paris a few months back and they don't have open loop yet. And we were like, man, it's so complicated to use that machine and to understand.
Oh, it is. I was there last summer and I thought the same thing. I was trying to, and I was just like, okay. But yeah, and like we're transit professionals, right? And if it's hard for us, what do you think
about the customer,
the other people, right?
I agree. And we want to try out, but for other people, it will be so complicated. And I really love your one line of like the data rich, information poor, flexible and scalable. It's amazing. I'm going to use these one liner many places.
Oh, please, we're sharing information.
And now I want to understand a little bit about your leadership philosophy. Like you mentioned, you are the first woman to lead RTD in 50 years of its history. And many places you were the first woman in the room. You are always very passionate about promoting women. So would love to learn more about your leadership style, what kind of leader you are, and what has been your most challenging decision as a GM of RTD so far? Because like you said, you come during pandemic time, you need to take some tough decision. What has been some of the tough decisions so far?
There's been quite a few. So as it relates to me in this place, if anything, I bring a humanistic approach to what it is that we're doing. Going back once again, I'm a person in the people business, and collectively, my teammates and I are people moving people. And so my leadership style is one of being participatory. I find great joy in being a public servant. As I said, I'm a person in the people business. And for me, it's really about leading by example. I want to model the behavior that I expect. And I'll deviate for a quick moment and talk about our strategic plan, because in that strategic plan, we have values. And while people are coming from different walks of life and they're converging upon one space, we have to be ensured that we are aligned around our values, which are the ideals and beliefs we hold to be true. And so that is very paramount for me. As we talk about our values here at RTD, it's about passion, it's about trustworthiness, ownership, collaboration, diversity. And when I say diversity, it's not just in people, it's about the thought and experience. In the sense, if somebody puts forward an idea of a thought, that I can embrace that diverse way of thinking and not just shut it down and say no. So that's critically important to me when I talk about model the behavior that I'd like to see. And then I do my best to listen more than I speak. And that's not easy. I mean, you can hear all these adages. Yeah, I have two ears and one mouth, so I should listen more. But in some instances, we as human beings feel like we're always formulating a rebuttal when somebody's speaking, as opposed to just stepping back and really taking in what people are saying. So that's part of my participatory leadership. And then what I really pride myself on is fostering a work environment where people want to do their ultimate best. They shouldn't shy away from speaking up in the room for fear that somebody will say, oh, that's not a good idea. No, that gets back to the value that I talked about, right? That we need to have people that are trustworthy, that have respect for one another, because first you have to have respect for self before you can have respect for somebody else. And by taking those six values that we have holistically and ensuring that we are showcasing those in such a way where people can clearly see their contributors, that leads to my philosophy of being that participatory leader.
Amazing. No, I really love, and I can vouch for that, because many times I met you, even first time I met you, you were always so welcoming. Even if you don't know people, you were so welcoming, and you were asking people like, okay, how can you help and how can you do stuff? And listening to people, that's I personally experience that you never shut down anybody. You were like always listening to ideas and experience that. So thank you for sharing. And one of the key thing, I know that you're a big supporter of women in leadership position. And I also love that, because in UITP, we also have this philosophy of making sure the women get equal participation. So all our panel session, we make sure they are equal participation. And I'm lucky in my team, I have a lot of women colleagues, and I really enjoy working with them, because the idea perspective they bring is really nice. So how you want to inspire the future leaders, the female future leader, what message you want to tell them?
I would say for future women leaders or future leaders as a whole, show up and be your own true self. Don't basically shrink yourself to make others feel big, because we all have something to bring to the table. And oftentimes within these big complex organizations, we may question ourselves just by virtue of having that imposter syndrome. We're never enough. Oftentimes we're our own worst critics. And when we take the opportunity just to engage with individuals, we all have a story of which we know nothing about. We all have little scary thoughts in our heads. And if we give each other the opportunity to be vulnerable with one another, we can see that we can come together and be bridges in those thought gaps for the betterment of whatever our initiatives are and whatever projects and deliverables are, because I have a teachable point of view. I say with my team, bad news doesn't get better with time, right? And so basically what I mean by that, if you're struggling with something, make that known, because there will be people that will want to rally around and help you. And so when we talk about women, oftentimes, you know, we have been reared in such a way, basically, we're talking about younger women, but generationally speaking, you know, I was born in the 60s. And so it was like, oh, you can do this. And these little girls should be over here and do this, that, and the other. That goes out the window. We should all be confident, competent, individuals that can contribute, and let's not stereotype what somebody should do by prejudging them based upon our own biases as we move forward. And so it's showcasing that I am here, I am up for the task, I was hired for a job, there were minimum qualifications to which I've met, and so I am deserving of the place in the room in which I'm sitting. That's what I would impart.
Amazing. No, I fully agree with it. And like you mentioned, we should not shrink ourselves. And I see, especially my female colleagues and other in a job posting, they want to match everything before applying. And they want to make sure, like my wife also, sometimes I discuss, she like, oh, I want to have this checklist. I'm like, come on, you can apply and let other persons judge, but they shrink themselves. They feel like, no, I need to complete everything before taking any action.
You're absolutely right. Looking at a job description, if there are minimum qualifications, we as women, there's 10 of them, we got to meet all 10 and then have some extra. And I don't mean to sound disparaging, but men on the flip side may meet 3 and it's like, oh, this job is perfect for me, right?
I do the same. So I've been like, okay, let's try. But I can see they want to make sure it has to be perfect don't take a risk, and that's how the society, we need to create more risk taking, and we need to encourage that. Now, this is my last question.
Okay.
You started in 2021, and let's say you continue till 2035.
Oh, good Google.
And then at that time, what kind of vision you have for RTD Denver when you want to look back, let's say in 15 years, and you say, what has RTD Denver has accomplished? Especially the autonomous mobility is growing and we will have some more competition. So how do you see the future of RTD Denver in the next 15 years?
Wow. It's really odd to think that 2035 is only 10 years away, right?
Yeah, that's true.
It's crazy. But first and foremost, as it relates to the vision for RTD, I am one person, right? And so if anything, RTD, and I didn't talk about this before, was created by virtue of the Colorado State Legislature back in 1969. And so I think that RTD's future will be reflective of how much value local and state leaders place in providing mobility options to the people of the region it serves. As we were talking earlier about, you know, our funding streams and things of the like, if people aren't investing in the transportation network and capitalizing on the taxpayer dollars that have made this system what it is today, then it's going to be for naught in 2035, because it's just not sustainable without that collective partnership. So I think that's a viable piece in the discussion about what I see relative to the future of RTD. So with that as the backdrop, I certainly believe that RTD will continue to be the backbone of transit across this region, and I would say in the state as well, because Denver is the biggest metropolitan area within the state of Colorado. It is critically important to the economic vitality of the state. And so if the agency continues to partner with communities to provide the maximum amount of service when and where it best serves customers, and within its people power and fiscal constraints, will be good. As for autonomous mobility, I can say I don't see it as being competition, but whether one more tool to further enhance access and mobility across the regions, especially when you get to the outlying areas that perhaps aren't as densely populated. Because as I said at the outset of our conversation today, transit is and always will be about access to opportunity, regardless of where we sit, where we are on that economic rung of that ladder. It really is about moving people to and fro and ensuring that they can take advantage of opportunities otherwise they may be isolated from. So simply put, in reference to the future, I see it as being a critical component. While it may be shaped differently from what I know it to be in 2025, I still think that the RTD network will be the linchpin in all the economic development in and around the Denver metro region.
Amazing. And I really love the point you said, autonomous mobility is just another tool to enhance public transport. It's not competition. It cannot replace, because the public transport is a backbone. And it will continue to remain as a backbone, but probably autonomous mobility can help to serve some of the, you know, the transit desert, we say, or outskirt area, and can provide a better service. Thank you so much, Deborah. I really learned a lot personally from this conversation. So thank you for your time and sharing all this knowledge. And we generally end this episode with, you know, a rapid fire round.
Okay.
And we ask some personal question, because now we know you as a leader, but now I want to know you as a person. So if you're ready, we will start with our quick question.
Okay, go.
Okay, so now you're working in transit for 33 years, but let's say if you're not in transit space, what other profession you would have selected?
I think now I would want to be like a motivational speaker.
Okay, amazing. So that's like a second part, I would say. You can be amazing. The kind of experience you got and the kind of personality you are, always cheerful. Which is your favorite city in the world and why?
I'll say Toronto. And I say Toronto because the diversity of people, culture, the food, it's like the hubbub of a true international city.
You should then come and visit.
I do. I love visiting.
Okay. Which is your favorite book?
I just read The Let 'Em Theory by Mel Robbins. So I'll say that's my current favorite book.
Okay. That's nice. I wrote it down. That's my to read list now. What one thing do you wish you should have learned early in life?
That I am enough.
I am enough. Amazing. Mm-hmm. You can be you are already a motivational speaker, I would say. Now, this is my last question. If you can change one thing in life, what would it be?
To get rid of all the isms. They shouldn't exist. Racism, sexism, all of that. I would just get away from all the isms. We could just be who we are and be embraced by each and every one of the other individuals on this planet.
We are imperfectly perfect. So yeah. We are enough. No, that's amazing. No, thank you so much, Deborah. Really great insight and really love this conversation. And wish you good luck with all your key initiative.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate spending time with you, being able to, you know, share some nuggets and glean from you as well as we had this conversation. So wishing you continued success.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this podcast. If you like this episode, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating, as it will help us to spread our message. If you have any feedback or suggestion for this podcast, please feel free to reach out to us at info@mobility-innovators.com. I look forward to see you next time. Take care.